between the cornfields, ridges left wild for hunting, where a man could easily pass the night unnoticed. Once we cooked dinner on a steep hill above the town of Christiana and went to sleep in a snowstorm, listening to the clatter of carriage horses on the street below. At dawn, we walked into town for pancakes and coffee, and then headed on up the railroad tracks before anyone whose job it was to stop us even knew we'd been there. But outside Harrisburg, where the Juniata River runs into the Susquehanna at her great breaching of Blue Mountain, we seemed to have been simply released into the wild. Early settlers tended to push up the major rivers until they ran into the first set of waterfalls, the fall line, and those spots became jumping-off points for people who were even more desperate or adventurous. At Blue Mountain, the Susquehanna drops down a series of ledges and deepens in the alluvial soil of the coastal plain, and that was where a Welsh emigre named John Harris established a business poling rafts across the river in the 1730s. What was then called Indian Country effectively started on the other side, and when Harris's passengers stepped ashore, they found themselves in a forest of enormous hardwoods that extended almost unbroken for the next 1,000 miles to the Great Plains. They were trappers and traders and fugitives from justice and young men scouting land for their families and eventually the families themselves. Many came on heavy oak frame wagons that were caulked like boats and carried everything. Food, tools, crockery, fabric, maybe an heirloom quilt that the forest couldn't provide. The wagons were low slung for stability and tented with canvas and had iron strapped wheels 6 inches wide that had no shock absorbers whatsoever. The men walked with long barreled flintlock rifles over their shoulders, and the women rode if they were pregnant and walked otherwise, and the children were up and down off the wagons all day long. These people made their way up the western bank of the Susquehanna, through the Blue Mountain Gap, and then turned onto the Juniata, which ran fast and clear all the way from the great escarpments of the Alleghenies. She was the only river that led west in the entire state and became a threshold of sorts to a better life or an early death for thousands of settlers who headed into the wilderness without any intention of returning. 300 years later, we walked through a cluster of camper trailers between the river and some standard gauge railroad and then climbed onto the tracks themselves. We could hear trucks downshifting on the last hill before Harrisburg on Route 22 across the river. It was late April, and the Juniata was running fast and full in the spring flood, an occasional tree rolling in her current that had been undercut along the banks and toppled. She flowed between ridges that looked too steep to climb and ran compass straight for miles. There were creeks for fresh water and flood rack for firewood, and woods so thick you could practically sleep within sight of a church steeple or police station and no one would know. It struck us as serious country, the kind where you kept an eye on the weather and slept next to whatever weapon you had. All we had was a machete, but after dark we all knew where it was, usually thunked into a tree somewhere central. Gunfire occasionally bounced off the shelf rock and detritus of the upper ridges, and one morning an A-10 thundered through so low we could almost make out the pilot in the cockpit. Not 2 days' walk from Harrisburg, we passed a sign nailed to a tree that warned the federal government that the property would be defended by any means necessary. There were meth addicts in some of the towns and black bears up on the ridges, and the remains of old locks and canals along the river that almost looked ready to be returned to good use if history ever required it. We walked single file on the cinder maintenance road that ran between the track bed and the river. Creeks chased down off the ridges like they were fleeing something. Swarms of gnats worked the sunlight, and bass boats spun past on the current below us. Where the tracks ran straight, we saw trains from a mile or more, headlights boring towards us like fierce little suns. But even on the curves, we had a sense that a great force was headed our way. The trains were so heavy and fast that they seemed to set the whole world in motion, vibrating the air and raising a strange pitch from the rail that fell at the edge of human hearing. We got so attuned out there that we'd know a train was coming without even knowing how we knew, but we knew. We'd step into the underbrush and sit on our packs, and some of us would roll a cigarette or drink water, and we'd wait for